Attention entrepreneurs and business owners. It's time to stop working so hard, start working smart, and build a business that stands on its own.
Generate real wealth, real freedom,
and a real legacy.
Now from New York City, small business champion and business attorney, helping thousands of entrepreneurs generate hundreds of millions of dollars. Here's Nina Kaufman, and this is the Cash Out Big Podcast.
Hi there, how are you? Welcome to Cash Out Big, where our mission is to double the value of your service business so you can start generating real wealth, real freedom, and a real legacy. I'm your host, Nina Kaufman, coming to you from the heart of New York City, and I'm glad you're here today. Thanks for tuning in. You know, one of the challenges, as you know, about having a service business is that you and your brain power or the brain power of your employees is the main talent, the main asset of your business, and every night, it walks out the door. And I heard a really sad story about a man who had worked at his business, had a handful of employees, had a business for probably close to 30 years. You know, a couple months ago, he wasn't feeling well, didn't think anything of it, and said to himself, I'll just power through. I'll take it easy tomorrow. Well, one of the five employees comes in the next morning, and it's tomorrow, and finds this guy at his desk, dead, slumped over in his chair, had a heart attack, total cliche. The man died at his desk. Now, one of the problems is that he died without a will and never really groomed any of the employees to take over or to step in when there was a crisis. So they, for the last month, they've been running around trying to piece together, saying, you know, is there a business to actually, can they actually piece together this 30-year-old business to continue to make it run? Because if not, not only has the value for the founder been lost with him, but also the livelihood for these employees has been lost as well. And that's a very difficult situation for a lot of small business owners to be stuck in. And it's one of the reasons why I'm excited to talk to our guest today, because we're going to be looking at what some of those things that buyers look for, some of those intangibles, so that you can start to put into place the kinds of things that enable a business to keep functioning even when a new owner can step in. And so if you want to get those tips, make sure you go to businessexponential.com and get signed up to get our executive summary. And now a little bit about our guest, Cliff Enico. I've admired Cliff's work for a long time because he's both a lawyer who speaks English and he's dealt with tens of thousands of new businesses. In fact, he's helped launch over 20,000 of them in his 35-year career. Cliff really has an ability to drill down to the nuts and bolts of the situation, particularly in an area like selling a business that gets very complicated and is fraught with a lot of emotion. And he's going to share with us some important secrets from the buyer's side so that we, as business owners and business sellers, can know what to anticipate, the kinds of objections that might come up, the concerns that might come up, and that makes the process of selling the business so much easier. But it's also a way of informing us how we can build the business so that that process becomes really smooth. So we're delighted to have Cliff here on Cash Out Big. Cliff, thank you so much for being with us today.
Hey, thanks, Nina. It's always a pleasure.
You have great experience in dealing with companies, both from formation through sale. And part of what I wanted us to talk about today is what are some of the things that you don't often see? I mean, there's a lot of information out there, top 10 steps, top things you should have. But what are some of the things you've seen that isn't quite so common that has really made a difference in whether a business sells and sells for really well?
Yeah. Okay, well, the answer is there's a lot of things. I mean, first of all, I'm assuming we're talking here about service businesses mostly.
Yes.
Where you are really the product at the end of the day. Maybe you have a little consulting business or, or maybe you're a plumber, maybe you're a contractor, but you have a lot of loyal customers who've been with you for years, and there's definitely value in that. The value of the business is a lot of the cases in your hands. There's not a lot of equipment, there's not a lot of inventory. Am I basically right about that?
Yes, yes. And it may be, again, a marketing firm where there are employees or outside a team member supporting, but it is often leader-led, leader-generated.
Exactly. And that makes for a big difference when you're going to sell the business. You should be aware, I represent a lot of buyers who buy businesses like this. And the first piece of advice that they give him, I don't want to spook your listeners at all, but the first piece of advice I give him is don't pay a lot of money up front for the business. And the reason for that is the key here is the seller and the seller's personality. really the biggest asset that you have when you sell your business is your personality. What was it that drew these clients to you? What is it that makes them keep coming back to you year over year over year? I mean, I'll confess to you, I'm a lawyer. I'm in a solo practice. My biggest asset right now, aside from thousands of customer files that I've amassed over 36 years, is the fact that I make people laugh. I don't judge them. You know, when they come to me, you know, they feel safe coming to me because they know the job's going to get done and I'm not. That is something that you really can't transfer to somebody else. When I come to sell my practice, some total stranger with a totally different personality is going to be coming in and taking over. And his or her biggest concern is going to be, I don't want all the customers disappearing out the door, you know, 30 days after we close the deal. I can give you a statistic. This is actually from the local medical association here where I live. But in our state, I won't say which state, when an older doctor sells his practice to a younger doctor, the attrition rate, the customer loss, can be as great as 50 to 60% in the first year. Okay. Patients go elsewhere. Mm-hmm. And again, the new doctor may be just as good. Being younger, he's probably more savvy on the latest techniques and preventive measures and all that stuff. But it's still, it's not the same as the old doctor. We traded Marcus Welby for Doogie Howser. You know, and that makes people nervous. And by the way, one of the last biases that we have in society that have not been beaten out of us politically is that we like our doctors to look older than we are. You know, we don't like doctors to look younger than we are. That makes us nervous. You know, we want the gray hair that looks like he's been around forever. And as we get older and older, that gets harder and harder to pull off, if you know what I'm saying.
Yes.
So seriously, I mean, it's a major issue. And the reason why I'm saying this, I know this is primarily a program for sellers, is you got to plan for that. And that is my message. You have to ask yourself, how can I assure this buyer that he or she will really get the value that I think that this business is worth? Okay. You know, obviously, when you value a business like this, you're looking at primarily the revenue stream from the customers, which is then discounted to a present value. And then an adjustment is made based on what you expect the attrition rate to be. If you can keep the attrition rate as low as possible, then that will increase the purchase price that you get at the closing, if you understand what I'm saying. The big unknown is how many of these people are we going to lose? So anything that you can do to keep that from happening will help. I often will tell my clients, whenever you come to sell, you should be planning at least 2 to 3 years ahead of time to sell your business. Don't wait until you bought the place in Florida. You got to close in 2 months and you have to unload this thing on somebody in 2 months. That's a mistake because the buyer is going to want you to hang around. And with a business like this, they're going to want you to hang around for a long time. If you're buying a deli or a fast food joint or something like that, the buyer normally will expect you to hang around for a period of 30 days, you know, just to make sure that, you know, the employees are happy, you know, that you meet and greet the customers, that people know that the transition is taking place. With a business like this, though, it's not going to be 30 days. It might be 6 months. It might be a year or longer. And again, the goal is to keep that attrition rate as low as possible. Don't be surprised if a buyer asks you for a royalty payment as a big part of your purchase price. And the reason I say this is because this is what I tell my buyer clients to do. you will get, they'll pay you a small amount of money, say $30,000 to $50,000 up front. But then beyond that, what they expect is that they will give you 20 to 30% of the gross revenue that they get from your existing clientele on the date of closing. You will actually print out a copy of all your customers, your patients, your clients, whatever. That'll become part of the closing documentation. And any business that the buyer gets off that list, you'll get 20 to 30% for a period of time, which can be anywhere from 2 to 5 years, monthly, quarterly payout usually. Mm-hmm. That, you know, and that's great because what that does is it binds you to the business. If there's a lot of customer attrition, a lot of customer loss, it's going to come out of your pocket because your royalty payments are going to go down through the seller.
Sure.
So be prepared for that. You should be prepared psychologically to work with your buyer at least 6 months to a year to keep that customer attrition rate as low as it can possibly go. Seriously, it's an important message, especially for this community. Don't think you can just dump the business for a couple of $100,000 and you'll return the guy's phone calls for 30 days. That might work with a deli. It will not work with a business like this. Right. And also, too, by the way, that's a great way for you to get to know the buyer and size them up and say to yourself, is this person worthy of my clients? You know, how do my clients feel about this? I mean, all of a sudden, now they've been dealing with Cliff Endicott for 25 years. Now they got this total stranger who seems nice, but how do they really know what Cliff knows? You know, do they get this business? Do they know me? Well, the answer to that's obviously not. You know, be prepared to spend lots of time going on ride-alongs with clients, you know, working on the transition period is going to be a very big factor in this deal when you go to sell your company. That's the bottom line message that I want to get across. If there's one thing I want to get across on this podcast, it's that.
Right. And you talked about being prepared to work with a buyer. Can you talk a little more about what does that actually mean? If it's not just, okay, I'm returning phone calls or a few emails while I'm out in Tahiti or wherever.
It's making sure, doing everything you can to make sure that the big customers at least stay with the buyer. Now, of course, if you're like me, I mean, I've worked with over 20,000 people in the last 30 years. There are people that call me regularly every couple of months. There are people that only call me once every 10 years. Obviously, there's no way, short of sending a letter to everybody saying, hey, I'm selling out and here's the guy, here's the new lawyer and he's absolutely great. I love the guy. Stay with him. You know, that kind of thing. There's really nothing I can do for most of those people. But having said that, you know, as with most businesses, you know, that 80 to 90% of your business only comes from 10 to 15% of those clients. Identify those clients early on and do everything you can to make sure that those people stay with the business when the business sells.
And that's that Pareto principle, sort of roughly the 80-20 rule.
80-20 rule, I would go a little bit deeper. I would say, you know, 80 to 90% comes from 10 to 15%. In a professional service business, I think that's absolutely true. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, if you're a doctor, there are people who just come in for their annual physical, you know, every 3 years they get their annual physical. my doctor jokes about that too with me, you know, but then there are people obviously who are very sick who are coming in like every 2 weeks, you know, for stuff. You know, you want to make sure that you identify who are the money makers and then do everything you can. I advise clients, meet with your customers. Tell them this is happening. Make sure, first of all, that the contracts are assignable. A lot of the contracts that you have with your customers are not assignable, and that can be a risk. If the language says that the contract cannot be assigned without the customer's consent, then you got to make sure that those people are on board. Be prepared to have them meet with the buyer, maybe work on a project together, have a transition period where you split the revenue 50-50, 80-20, whatever, you know, do a sliding scale where the customer can see the new person and say, okay, Cliff has confidence in this person and I really like this. I like her. I think I can deal with her. I think I'm going to stick around. I'm going to stay with this. Again, you can never control your customers. Nobody can own customers. You know, they outlawed that back in the 1800s.
Right.
You can't do that anymore. and let's face it, if the buyer doesn't exactly have the sparkling personality that you have, and in the legal profession, trust me, that is a very big deal.
Good shoes to follow.
You know, I mean, I joke about this. I say, just because I'm a lawyer, it doesn't mean I'm a nice guy. You know, so... You see, you're good. You get all my jokes. I really like, I always like talking to you, Anita, because you get all my jokes. I love that. Yeah. But this is the stuff that's not in the books. This is what the books don't tell you. They talk a lot about valuing things and doing present values of the customer contract. That's all math. Your accountant can help you with that. The toughest thing is keeping that attrition rate lowable. If you can go to a buyer and say, look, just so you know, I prepared the field for you. As long as you know, don't cross your eyes and start cursing at people and getting them angry at you, 90 to 95% of my best customers will stay with you. That will increase your purchase price. And that will get you a better deal, you know, rather than here's the customer list. Now, here's the computer. Now go have fun. You know, and I've seen people do that. Make sure you send letters to everybody. But your best customers shouldn't hear about this first in the letter. They should get a personal letter or a personal call or a meeting with you. Sit down with them. You are not going to bill for this. But sit down with them and talk to them about what's going on, why you've made this decision, the fact that you'll still be around, you know, if need be, you'll be there to help this person out, whatever. But, you know, how do you feel about it? You know, get a feel for them and you know, let them know I got this great person. Here's his background. Here's what I think he can do, you know, yada, yada. Get them to hear about it. You don't want to just send the letter out and hope that people, you know, will stay with the person. You know, start working on it before you sell. So that way you can tell the buyer, look, I've already pre-sold this to 90% of my clients. They're not going to have a problem with this. You know, just as long as you don't have horns on your head, you should be, and have mafia connections, you should be okay. You know, because that is important. I mean, because let's face it, once you hand the reins over, you usually sign a non-compete, you know, saying that you can't do any business within a certain radius for 2 to 3 years. And, you know, as long as the person is making their payments on time, you can't go back and talk to your customers and say, hey, wait a minute, look, he's really okay. Stay with him, stay with him, stay with him. Once you hand over the reins, it's too late. So that's why I recommend, because that's really what they're about. You ask, what are the assets? Buyers always buy assets. They never buy the stock in your company. They don't want that because their attorneys, people like me, are telling them, don't do that because then you're stuck with whatever liabilities are on the balance sheet or maybe not on the balance sheet.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, no matter, you know, people know you can either buy the stock or you buy the assets of a business. But let me tell you, in the real world, buyers want to buy the assets. And it's a classic case of the golden rule. You know, he who has the gold makes the rules. So, you know, they got the money, so they're going to get the deal that they want. You're going to be selling assets, whether you like it or not. And what are the assets of a service business or a consulting business or something like that? Answer, it's the customer files and the customer records. That's what you're selling. That really is it. I mean, other than, you know, goodwill, yes, you know, the goodwill of the business. But a lot of that goodwill is wrapped up in you and your personality. The other person is coming in with a totally different goodwill. Unless, of course, he is your clone, in which case, I mean, then maybe there's a shot. But in most cases, that's not going to happen.
Speaking of clones, can I just jump into the issue of employees? So let's say I've got, you know, a slightly larger firm. I've got 10 employees. Let's take the example of an advertising firm. And my clients have gotten used to the fact that I personally am not working on their files every single minute of every single day, that there is a team. Does having that kind of infrastructure make it easier in your experience to make that transition for clients and keep the attrition rate lower?
It makes it easier, but it also makes it harder too, because now you rely on those key employees sticking around as well. And that can be tricky. I always tell young lawyers who are thinking of buying a law practice, you know, get to know the receptionist, the admin person. If the receptionist has been around for more than a couple of years, marry that person. Seriously, that person knows more about what goes on in that practice than the attorneys do. They know where all the files are. They're the only people in the firm who have day-to-day contact with all the clients. And they know them, and people rely on them. They get Christmas and holiday gifts from them. You know, that is a very key person. If that person disappears, you've just lost all the office history. And that can be a problem for your buyer. In the case of an advertising firm where there's, you know, there's employees, you got to find out who has the key customer accounts and who has gotten a little too close to the customers. I'm always a little leery of company owners who delegate too much to their employees, and especially customer contact. Lawyers do this all the time. A lot of law firms have lost key clients because they delegated too much to a junior lawyer. The junior lawyer got very friendly with the next generation, you know, the business owner's son or daughter.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
You know, so that when the associate got laid off, guess what happened? He took the big client with him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that can be a problem. If one of these employees, I mean, now obviously you don't want to lock them up to multi-year employment contracts. There's very good reasons why you want to have everything employees at will. But you got to make sure that those key people are going to be happy and that they're going to stay with the business. Or that at least they have signed some sort of a non-solicitation agreement that says that in the event that they are terminated, whether with or without cause, they will not contact any of the client's customers, the company customers, for a period of at least 2 years. Non-compete agreements are no longer in favor.
Right.
Courts do not like them. It's too easy to get around them. But the non-solicitation clause, the clause that says, look, if you get terminated, we don't care where you work. You want to open up a shop, you want to compete, great, have fun, knock them dead. But you can't steal any of our customers. You cannot cause our customers to cease doing business or encourage them to do business with someone else. That is key language. You know, if they want to go to work for the client, that's fine, but they cannot make the client do less business with the company. If they can, they will be sued, and they have to know that. And you have to be prepared to enforce that, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
Getting agreements like that with all of your employees will enhance the value of your business to the potential seller, because he knows that if an employee does leave and tries to take a client with him, he has some recourse. He can do something to stop that.
Okay. So it sounds like in terms of having these conversations, you know, at what point do you let employees into the fact that you're thinking about selling, or this may be on the radar, to give them a sense of, you know, you want them to have a happy home with a new buyer, and that you're going to be looking out for them and that maybe that is part of your consideration in choosing a buyer.
It is. I'll tell you, it is tricky, and there's it's kind of a Goldilocks problem. If you let them know too soon that you're thinking about selling, then they're going to start looking for work elsewhere, or maybe they'll be tempted to take that client and go with them. The best time to hit them, by the way, with that non-solicitation agreement is before you're planning to sell. That way you'll find out who the loyal people are and who the not-so-loyal people are. It's a good way to test your employees' loyalty. Make sure a lawyer drafts it, by the way, because that language has to be very specific. But if you wait too late and you hit them with a surprise, and let's face it, these people have gotten personally attached. All small businesses are like a family. In some respects, look at any sitcom on television.
Right.
You become like family. Barney Miller, remember the detectives from New York?
Oh,
and
yeah.
They were like a family, man. One guy got killed, and I was like, died, and the whole thing went. The whole thing was upset the whole family. You know, so you got to let them know that this person is going to be part. That's one of the reasons why I like the transition period, because it gives you a chance to phase it in. Hey, look, here's Joe Blow. He's going to be my partner for a while. You know, he's really interested in, you know, working closely with some of our clients. You know, just so you know, you're going to be dealing with him. I'm ultimately the boss, but I want you to share stuff with him just the same way you'd share it with me. He's going to have a cubicle just the same as you are. You know, let that work for a few months. It also gives the buyer a chance to say, okay, I got to keep Joe, but Bob is a loser. I'm getting rid of him. It gives them a chance, too, to figure out, you know, what they want to do with various people. You know, so because it's tricky. I mean, some of your employees may think that they are the heir apparent. I had it happen about a month ago where a client of mine was looking to sell his business. He had like five long-term employees. I mean, the buyer was great, lovely lady. You know, about a week before the closing, he basically let people know. And by the way, the gentleman was in his 80s, to let you know. It was certainly time for him to retire, right? But one of the employees came to visit him all upset because she was getting ready to make him an offer to buy the business. She was actually hired an attorney and accountant, and she was putting together a proposal to buy the business from him. She wanted to be the successor, and she basically said, look, whatever this lady's offering you, I'll double it.
Wow.
So, I mean, that can happen. Now, of course, for him, that's a great thing. You know, as we say, an auction with one bidder is a very short auction.
True.
But it also was very stressful because he had also made a commitment to this lady to sell the business, and now he's got an employee offering him twice as much. You know, somebody who knows the business, who knows everybody inside and out, who's definitely an insider. And by the way, there's a little lesson in that too, which is, you know, when you get to the point where you start thinking about selling out, look at your employees and ask yourself, you know, if I were to bite the bucket tomorrow, if I were to board the wrong airplane tomorrow and something happened to me, who is prepared to take over this business? Who could run this business? You know, because to the extent you can transfer to an insider, someone who's already known, who's already friends and family, that makes that problem a lot easier rather than bringing in a total stranger from the outside.
Right, certainly in terms of the attrition rate. But as you say, you're still going to be waiting for the payout. It won't be a cash out and let me go to
the buyer wants, in this situation, Nina, the buyer wants a turnkey operation. They don't want to have to. They don't want a situation where there's surprises. They want to walk in, and at least for a while, until they're ready to make changes, they want to just run the business the way it has been running. You know, so anything you can do to minimize the surprises, customers leaving, key employees leaving. Now, don't get me wrong. There are some employees you want to get rid of. Maybe the buyer has family members that need work, and he wants to bring these people in and put them in these positions. There is nothing you can do about it. If they're employees at will, which they will be in most states, the buyer can do whatever he wants. He can terminate them with or without notice. Just make sure that the customers don't go with them and make sure that they have non-solicitation agreements so that they can't raid the company, you know, after they leave. That will enhance the value to a buyer.
Okay, great. So you mentioned turnkey operation, reducing the attrition rates. Are there anything, again, aside from the math that we may not often think about in terms of making the business attractive and sellable from a buyer's perspective?
Yeah. Well, let's put it this way. Your financial statements are important. Year-over-year growth is a very important thing. Buyers look at that very much. I mean, if you've been losing customers steadily over the years, that's a story that has to be explained to somebody. You know, why is it happening? Is it happening just because you're getting tired and you're not putting the time into the business? Or has a new competitor just opened up in town and they're taking all the business? I always tell buyers, be very wary of buying a business in a town you don't or an area that you don't know. Make sure if you do that you get a good lawyer or good accountant who's based there and who has local knowledge of what's going on in that community. You know, demographic trends. I mean, I live in a town where the biggest employer in town, I won't mention names, but we had a major corporate headquarters that was based here in town. And about 3 months ago, they announced over the next year, they're going to move their operations out of state. So right now, you know, a lot of local businesses are doing great, but in another 6 months, they're not going to be doing so great as that company moves employees out of state or lays them off or does whatever. You know, that is something, if you're not from this area, you don't necessarily know that that's going on.
Right.
You need somebody with local knowledge who can say, hey, wait a minute, you know, this company's moving out. You know, just so you know, we're all kind of preparing for the next Brexit, you know, here. you know, you should be aware of that. Don't overpay for this business, because it's very likely you're going to see some customer attritions as these employees we're a barbershop. It's heavily dependent. Half our business comes from this company's employees, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah. So, I mean, and sadly, we had that in New York City after 9/11, that there was a whole ripple effect of that small business. I mean, all of the tailors and the delis and the shoe repair people and all of those who provided services to that city that just happened to be vertical. It was 110 stories up.
Yeah, that's exactly right, too. And I'll share with you that I worked in Building 2 of the World Trade Center. I worked in the South Tower during the latter part of the 1980s. So I felt I was nowhere near there on the day it happened, but I felt that very personally. I lost a couple of friends that day. So I know what you're talking about. Those office skyscrapers build little infrastructures around them that depend on them. No, very much. And that's the thing. You want to know what's likely to happen there. Now, again, it could be on the growth side, too, but you really don't know. Is the area growing? Is the area shrinking? I mean, if of course, the business is dependent upon local traffic. Be careful about, especially in the advertising and marketing businesses, you know, the world is going digital. Digital marketing is becoming the way that people advertise. If an advertising company is still insisting on Yellow Pages ads, you know, for their clients, I think it's a sign that maybe this isn't the right company to buy. Or if you are going to buy, you know, get a fire sale price or something, because you're going to have to turn some stuff around, you know, especially for a younger buyer. And by the way, a lot of older buyers are sensitive to this. You know, one of the main reasons that 80-something gentleman that I told you about was looking to sell his business was because he recognized that he wasn't the one to bring this business into a digital age. He wanted somebody younger who could make this into more of an internet-based company. And that's perfectly valid, you know, and if that's the case, you know, and the buyer may, and again, the buyer may not be, you know, again, some, if you're very lucky, the buyer won't care about a lot of this stuff because they just want to take this business. They just want to buy the name so they can turn it around and make it into their own thing. And if that's the case, then God bless you. You're in great shape. But most buyers aren't. There are people that want it as much as possible, a turnkey operation, and they're going to want to ask you, their attorneys will ask you to make promises, you know, that, in fact, you know, I'll share this with you, and this is no secret to your listeners, but that's why you always do like a 10 or 15% holdback. You hold back the purchase price, and then if revenue declines over, you know, the next year, then, you know, you take that as compensation for the loss of business. You know, of course, the comeback to that is, well, wait a minute, you know, the business was doing fine until you took over, dude. It was because of your mismanagement that all that business went away. You know, you don't know what you're doing. You know, all the employees left because they can't stand you. You know, but that's why I'm suggesting the long transition period is the cure to that disease. It really benefits everybody. It gives the seller a chance to find out how the buyer works, how they deal with people. You know, do they have people skills? You'd be amazed how many very, very smart people do not have emotional intelligence and know how to deal with people. It's becoming a lost art in many ways. I mean, I see a lot of it, and I'm not going to stereotype, mostly younger people, but I see a lot of people in my generation too, brilliant people. They look great on paper, but they just don't know how to interact with customers on a one-on-one basis. They can't look at the world through their eyes, and that's an important thing. And you can't gauge that on a 30-day due diligence period. You need a longer period of time to figure that out. If you're the right type of seller, you treat your business as a baby. And you know yourself, when one of your kids gets married, you really look at that prospective son and daughter-in-law very, very closely.
Oh, yeah.
You psychoanalyze them because your baby's health and happiness is at stake. That is exactly the way you should look at your business when you sell it. You know, I worry when a client of mine is looking to buy a business where the seller is overly anxious to sell. He just wants to dump it and get on with his life. He may have legitimate reasons to do it, but it also tells me he hasn't been treating this business like a baby. He hasn't been treating it like family. And this buyer is going to have a bad experience at some point. I don't know where it's going to come from, but he's going to have problems at some point because the seller really hasn't been managing this business in a way that it can be taken over. That's the thing. Is your business ready to be taken over? If you were to drop dead today and, you know, your next of kin or whatever took over, what would happen to the business? Is the business ready for that? You know, if the answer is no, then my advice to your listeners would be get your business in that place. And then you'll find the sale process when it happens, when you're ready to do it or when the right buyer comes along, you'll be in a better position to do it. Don't wait until you have to sell the business to start putting things in place that will make the business, you know, a lot more attractive to prospective buyers.
Right. And you're absolutely right, because I know with my clients, if you're doing it from a place of rush and desperation, people smell that immediately, and it impedes that trust factor. That's a really important part of that process. So as we close, are there any other intangible things? You know, you and I talked at another time about, I know it was an example of ice cream parlors. What's the difference between the one where there are essentially crickets chirping at the doorway and the other where you've got a line around the block? What are some of those other intangible differences that buyers look for as they're looking into?
Let's talk about goodwill. Businesses. I mean, when you talk to a lawyer about goodwill, the word that pops up into our heads immediately is trademark. Does the brand have value? Is it recognizable? Do people recognize it when they see it? Do they have a high opinion of it? I mean, silly as it may seem, you know, check the business out on Yelp and all these online review sites that are cropping up like weeds. You know, a lot of the stuff you have to take with a ton of salt, but it's a good way to figure out, does this brand have value? Are people having a good experience there? You know, is the place clean? Are these people engaged in the community? That's another thing, too, by the way. In fact, I actually found this saying, it's so funny, I found myself saying this to my client just this very morning. I said, you know, the thing that worried me, he sold this business to a wonderful buyer. The only trouble is the buyer does not live in the community where the business is located. He lives in the town and two towns over, which is okay. You know, from a commuting point of view, he can certainly handle it, but he's not a part of that community. He doesn't have kids in the school system. You know, other people don't know who he is. You know, the local cops don't know him by name. You know, those little things make for a business. If you have become part of your community and you're selling to someone who's not part of that community, there is going to be some attrition there, and you need to plan for that because the person is just, it's a stranger. It's not somebody people say, oh yeah, wait a minute, I know him. His daughter, I think, was in my son's fourth grade volleyball class or something like that. You know, silly things like that are what keep your clients together. Well, wait a minute, this guy, I kind of know him. Let me give him a chance or her. You know, those are sort of the intangible things. Try to say, if it is a community-based business, now obviously if you're an advertising agency with clients all over the country, that's not as big a factor. They're the most important things to make sure. But if you've advanced a portion of the purchase price and you're getting paid back over time, or if you're getting one of those royalty deals that I talked about earlier where you get a percentage of the gross sales over 3 to 5 years, you know, take a good look at who this buyer is. Who is this person? Are they connected? Do they have the talent? Do they have the connections? Do they have the people skills to be able to keep this business running the way that you have? If the answers are all yes, then you'll probably end up sleeping a lot better down the road. It's like that old saying from The Godfather, Nina, and this is probably a good thing to close on. You want your friends close and your enemies closer, right? Well, the buyer is not your enemy, of course, but you're going to need to marry this person. What's that line from the Stephen Sondheim show, Company, Marry Me a Little? Right. It's a song from one of the Stephen Sondheim musicals. I think it's Company. I'm not sure. But Marry Me a Little, that's the idea. This is not going to be a situation where you hand off the business and go riding off into the sunset. There's going to be a transition period. Start planning for it now. Start thinking about the right type of buyer. Who would the customers like? Who are the employees? Who would do well? And then look for that person. Look for that type of person when you go looking for your buyer. Don't just be taken in by the money. Now, of course, if the buyer offers you, you know, ten times the net worth of the business, and you know, in an all cash deal, do not say no to that.
Right. Good luck with that.
I was going to say, I don't think that you're going to find too many people out there like that. If they do, they have some kind of an agenda, and you probably should find out what that agenda is. If you're lucky enough to get a buyer like that, God, take the money and run. Well, that's it. Just be sure to get all cash, though. Don't take back money. Right. Don't take back paper. But seriously, most deals are not going to be like that. I mean, this is a legacy that you have built, and you want. I mean, I will share with you that when I was a young lawyer, I worked for three law firms in New York City, you know, before I finally got religion and I went off on my own where I was a lot happier. But two of those three firms no longer exist anymore for reasons having nothing to do with me, I assure you. let me say that right up front.
Right.
It wasn't me. It wasn't my fault. You know, but that's a sad thing when you get to be my age in my 60s. I can't point to anything and say I helped build that, if you know what I mean. You know, when you built a business, especially if you're the founder, if you built this thing from scratch, you want to have a legacy. You want to be able to drive along the local, you know, commercial strip 10 years from now and say, you know, I was the original owner of that business. I made that business. I made that happen. That's a lot of the little things that get you through old age. If the business isn't there 5 to 10 years from now, And especially if it's not there because you botched the deal, basically. Even if you did get a decent reward for your time, your investment of time and money, it's still going to rankle with you. If I hadn't sold that business to that jerk, that thing would still be here. I could still be proud of that. You know, don't discount that. Maybe I'm just talking like an old man. You know, maybe I am. But seriously, when you get older, you start to look into your legacy. What kind of a legacy did I leave behind me here?
Right.
You want that legacy to be there. You know, do structure the deal in such a way that there's at least the maximum chance you will have that legacy, and you'll be able to point to pride 10 years from now and say, you know what? You know, old Joe over there, he's really made a big thing out of that business. I'm so happy. You know, that was my baby. And, you know, thanks to me, that thing is here.
Right. Right.
You know,
well, that's a wonderful way to close. So, Cliff, thank you so much for all of those really great insights. And again, letting us know that there are things outside of just the math of the deal that are very,
well,
very
exactly.
important to get a successful sale.
The math is the beginning part, but that you can get from the books or from your accountant or financial advisor. This is the stuff that's not in the books. And this is the stuff that I talk about all over the place. I have a YouTube channel, by the way. If you go to YouTube and you search for Cliff Enico, that's E-N-N-I-C-O. I always go by Cliff. You'll see I've got about 36 videos up there, you know, on all aspects of, you know, dealing with small business, buying, selling, owning, starting, you know, whatever. You know, and I also have a pretty cool website at succeedinginyourbusiness.com. I have a weekly column that I write, basically like an Ann Landers for business owners. People email their crazy questions, and either I answer them or I get somebody really famous to answer them. And you can do an RSS feed, you know, from my website. You can actually get a notice every time the new column gets posted. And if you want to look at it, great. It's all kinds of fun stuff. It's all the stuff that you won't read about in books anywhere.
Yeah, and we'll have links to both of those things on our Business Exponential blog, so people
okay,
can make
great.
Sure to click on that and have a look. So again, thank you so much for being with us and for all of your insights into, you know, what are the inside secrets to some of those things that buyers want that you don't often see through the math.
And if anybody out there is looking to buy a solo law practice that has been around for 36 years from a very kindly old small town lawyer, please send them in my direction.
This wouldn't be a personal pitch, would it?
Personal? Me? No.
The buyer has to have a sense of humor, right?
I know a guy who knows a guy who knows a guy. Let's just leave it at that. Okay.
Terrific. Cliff, again, thank you so much.
Not a problem. Take care.
And thank you for tuning in and listening to Cash Out Big. Are you ready to have your service business generate real wealth, real freedom, and a real legacy? Then make sure you're on our list to get our executive summary. Go to businessexponential.com. These are the top tips from each episode you can put into action right away. A summary of the highlights you've just heard. And if you need to listen in at a later time, you can at least see and read real quickly what we're doing and get the highlights. Just go to businessexponential.com and get signed up. Go there now, and we'll see you on the next episode of Cash Out Big.